One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" He answered, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar, the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for the priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, 'The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath.' Another time he went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, 'Stand up in front of everyone.' Then Jesus asked them, 'Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?' But they remained silent. He looked around at them in anger, and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts, said to the man, 'Stretch out your hand.' He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus."
If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's day honorable, and if you honor it not by going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find your joy in the Lord. And I will cause you to ride on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob." The mouth of the Lord has spoken. Please turn to Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 to 11. "Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." This is the word of the Lord, and let's pray that we shall be doers, not just hearers of his word.
As I suggested to you earlier in the service, our lives are so filled and our hours are so packed that it often seems as if we are frenzied and running and moving so quickly. Bill Hill and I have a dear friend that we have sometimes prayed with together. And one time the three of us were praying together and talking about all of our packed lives and about how full things are and how intense things are. And particularly our other friend and I were doing a bit of griping, and Bill, who seemed particularly relaxed that morning, just looked at us and said, "Guys, don't panic." And we just burst out laughing because we realized that's what we were doing. We were just panicking in our lives and just allowing the stream and the flow and the overwhelming number of things that seem to fill our lives just to get to us. Don't panic. Well, how do you not panic? How do we begin to see our lives as God sees them? How do we begin to see our time as God sees our time? How do we begin to understand the calibration and the movement, the pace of our lives in such a way that we move through life purposefully and pointedly and with the kinds of results that we all desire? Well, it may seem odd to you that the best and the most enduring and reliable way to get handles on the difficulties of time in your life and my life is by a study of the fourth commandment. And as I began to try to speak to the congregation at the earlier hour about this commandment, I quickly realized that there was much more to say than we're going to have time for in just one Sunday. And so I tell you from the outset that we're going to spend two Sundays on this commandment, which is really a good thing to do anyway, because it takes a while for the things that I'm going to introduce to you just now to sink in and for them to begin to have an effect down beneath the soil, the surface of our lives, so that the roots of our lives are nourished by the truths of this fourth commandment, and it begins to affect the way we live out in the branches of our lives. It takes a while. And so spending 2 weeks on this is not a wrong idea. In 1875, the city fathers of Evanston, Illinois, decided that the local drugstores in their community were desecrating the Lord's Day by allowing there to be made and served in those drugstores ice cream sodas on Sunday. And so they passed an ordinance now, this is 1875, prohibiting the making of drinks with carbonated water on the first day of the week. But then an enterprising soda jerk solved the problem by putting together a concoction without using carbonated water. And from that time until this time, his tasteful combination of ice cream and syrup has been known as a ice cream sundae. You know, when we talk about the fourth commandment, so often the discussion degenerates very quickly into a list of do's and don'ts. You may do this, you may not do that. The old-fashioned approach emphasizes what I cannot do on Sunday. And there's a long list usually. And we have an image of a 10-year-old boy sitting in a straight-backed chair with his hands folded on his lap, wearing his starched shirt and his Sunday school suit on a summer day with the temperature rising up above 95 and the sound of his friends out in the street playing ball, and he can't do it. In fact, one of my dearest friends and mentors, an older gentleman now just recently turned 80, who's spoken in our church a number of times over the years, Dr. Ed Clowney, recalls that when he was a youth growing up in Philadelphia, he was permitted to read paperback books on any day of the week except Sunday. But on Sunday, he could only read hardback books. Well, that's the old-fashioned approach. There's a modern approach, and on this approach, Sunday, well, it's a holiday from the notion of holy day. But a holy day has actually become a holiday, and it exists for my pleasure and for my recreation. Sunday is really a day that, well, it's just there in the conventions of mankind in order to give me a day of, well, a day of rest. Yes, a day of rest for me to spend as I please and as I want. And after the hardcore recreation of Saturday, Sunday's a good day to mellow out before we get back to the tasks of Monday morning. So on the one hand, our traditional way of talking about the Sabbath is that it's all formalism. There's no lightness. There's no laughter. There's no joy, really. There's not even much good rest. But on the other hand, it's all freedom, with a kind of bloated and unsatisfying view of leisure. Well, the way out for the Christian who is going to think about his life from God's point of view, the way out is a decidedly third way. Not the formalism and the rigidity of the traditions, which some of us grew up with, and not the unbridled freedom which most of us take for granted. It is a decidedly different, a third way. And actually, I think for some of you, it may, as a result of this Sunday and next Sunday, become the only way you know. Because you know what? This subject is absolutely irrelevant to you. You have never, if you're honest, some of you, not all of you, but some of you have never once in your life thought about what you should do or not do on Sunday because it is a day that is different than others. But I want to challenge you today and next Sunday to think about Sunday as a delight and a joy and a day that actually shapes and frames the whole of your life, that gives purpose and structure, that helps you not to panic in the midst of all the days of your life, that helps you order your time. And in order to do that, we need to see it an entirely new and third way. And it's the way that Jesus pointed to in the Gospels, and it's the way of seeing the Sabbath as a day that belongs to the Lord. Open your Bibles again to Mark chapter 2, to the passage that was read for us earlier so beautifully by Christina. Here in this passage we see what? We see the legalism of the Pharisees, don't we? We see Jesus reacting to that legalism. It's a suffocating legalism that the Pharisees had, which robbed the Sabbath of its renewing power. And the Pharisees had all kinds of rules about what one could do or not do on this particular Sabbath day. Many rules. In fact, they said you could walk 5 steps on the Sabbath, but you must rest before you take a 6th step. They said that women could not wear ribbons in their hair on the Sabbath. That would be to carry a burden. You could not drag a stick on the ground on the Sabbath day. That would be plowing. And you could not pluck out a gray hair on the Sabbath day. That would be reaping. And here in Mark, Jesus is accused by the Pharisees of breaking the Sabbath. But really what he's doing is he's breaking their understanding of it, isn't he? And just as David and his hungry men ate the consecrated bread from the tabernacle, which was normally reserved for the priests, so Jesus and his disciples could pick ears of corn to eat when they were hungry on the Sabbath day. And so too, therefore, is Jesus teaching that we can provide for the necessities of life on the Sabbath day. And that it's not wrong to do those things which are necessary for the maintenance of our existence on Sundays. And just as Jesus heals a man with a withered hand on the Sabbath here, in this passage in Mark, so too should we act mercifully on the Sabbath to meet human needs. This is a very important passage, actually, in understanding the whole of the Sabbath in the whole of the Bible, because it shows us that in the Lord's Day and on the Lord's Day, our activities are surely to be characterized by doing some things which we would call rightly acts of necessity and acts of mercy. So on the one hand, the maintenance of life and all that goes with that is entirely proper. And on the other hand, all that goes with giving mercy to those who need it, maybe particularly medical needs, and certainly including those in medical professions, they are to do their work on the Lord's Day. And this kind of legalism which the Pharisees had really prevented the caring of people, and it caused Jesus to be angry, and it caused him to be grieved at their hardness of heart. He's upset at their legalism. He's upset at what God intended to be a delight for His people, being turned into something rigid and formal and ugly. And so He says in chapter 2, verse 27, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And He means there just what He says, that God created this day, at least in part, He created it for us, for our enjoyment, for our pleasure, for our delight, for meeting the needs of our lives. He created it for us. He gives it to us as a gift that so many Christians have failed to unpack and to use. But the same Lord who says that the Sabbath is made for man goes on in verse 28 to say, so the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. Even of the Sabbath, Jesus is Lord, He says. He is Lord of all. He's Lord of all of creation. He's Lord of everything in heaven and earth. After all, Jesus was there when creation took place. As the Apostle John puts it, all things came into being through Him, and apart from Him, nothing came into being that has come into being. Jesus was the general contractor of creation. He was with the Father, in collaboration with the Father, in the whole of the created order. And when it came to the seventh day, Jesus said, together with His Father, let's rest. And so the Sabbath is the Lord's idea. It's Jesus' idea, and it belongs to Him. It's the Lord's day. He is its Lord. And because the Sabbath is the Lord's day, all of our thoughts about what we are to do or not do on that day are put into the context of what? Of our relationship with this loving and grace-filled Lord who has given us an enormous present we haven't even unwrapped. And so as we come to think about this particular day, and it does require some thinking for many of us, as we come to think about it, we must see that it's an enormous gift from the Lord. And that as we take joy in the Lord and in His gifts to us, as we thank Him for His creative work, and as we thank Him for His recreative work at the cross and the empty tomb, then those creative and recreative works of God create the structure for our understanding what real rest is. And our desire to please the Lord then flows out of this magnificent gift and the wonder of the relationship that sustains that gift and stands behind it. Let me give you a very human illustration, if I may. As much as possible, I take Saturday to be with Barbara and our kids. Insofar as possible, I don't spend much of Saturday doing the work that characterizes much of the rest of my week, work in our church. And until Saturday night, at least, when I turn my head and heart to my sermon notes, and where I really try and preach my sermon to myself and to my own heart in preparation for preaching it to you on Sunday morning, until Saturday evening, I give the day as much as possible to my family. Now, on Saturday morning, when I get up, I don't think like this. I don't say, oh, it's Saturday again. Oh, gee, I have to spend 3 hours and 20 minutes with Chris and Carrie and Becca while Barbara has a little time to herself. Oh, my, I must spend 27 and a half minutes talking to Barb, sitting stiffly in the kitchen table. No, I don't think that way. I belong to these people, and they belong to me. It is my joy to share this day with them. It's not a burden, even if I don't get to do all of the things on that day that I want to do, even if my list of top 10 recreational items doesn't get met on that day. It is my joy to give this day to my wife and to my children. And out of love and out of joy, I make decisions to go to my son's games and to be a bit available to Barb's needs. The Lord's Day, because it belongs to Him, is not to be marked by a joyous kind of legalism, but a thankful embracing of an opportunity to do some things that I literally don't have the time to do in the rest of my week. But if we're honest, legalism on the Lord's Day is not likely to be the problem most of us have. Rather, for most of us, we pursue this day with a kind of assumed right to the unbridled pursuit of leisure. And this is where this remarkable passage that Stephen read from the book of Isaiah comes in. Look back again at Isaiah chapter 58. This is one of the finest passages in the whole subject of the Sabbath that's in the whole of the Bible, and there's much in the Bible about the Sabbath, much more than you might think. Because God cares about our time, cares about the way we use it, cares about the panic of our lives, and cares that we recalibrate our lives according to a different standard. There's a great deal in the Bible about it, but in Isaiah 58, there's a remarkable brief statement of the Lord's loving intention in giving us the Sabbath day. Verse 13, if you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, who does the day belong to? The Lord. It's His day, first of all. If you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honorable, in other words, if you see that because the day belongs to the Lord, it's not drudgery. Oh, I've got to go do what I don't want to do on this day. I've got to go be with Chris and Carrie on this Saturday. Gee whiz, poor me. No, it's my delight and joy to do it. And it's my delight and joy to spend Sunday, the Lord's day, in the way the Lord wants me to spend it. If you honor the Lord by not going your own way and not doing as you please, or what is your pleasure, literally, or speaking idle words, then, verse 14, you will find your joy in the Lord. And I will cause you to ride on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob. The mouth of the Lord has spoken. I don't know what it means to ride on the heights of the land. I think I can guess, and I think I can begin to grasp a hold of the wonder of that poetry. But you see, Isaiah is trying to use an image, a poetic image, to begin to describe to us a joy that we do not normally know. A joy that can fill our lives, and a joy that can make sense of our lives, and a delight to our lives that does not characterize most of us most of the time. This is the reward, as it were, for taking seriously that this day is not mine, but the Lord's. That's the promise. And we're not to seek our own pleasure on it, he says. The word pleasure is used in the old-fashioned sense, doing what you please, your pleasure, without concern for what God wants on this day. It doesn't mean that the Sabbath is to be a day of gloom with no pleasure. In fact, as we've just been saying, it's a delight. Because Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath, we plan and prepare to listen to Him on this day before we listen to the sportscaster or to the movie star. Now, I'll have more to say about both of those next week. But I'm not saying that there is never any room ever for turning on the television or never seeing a movie on Sunday. But what I am talking about is, of course, priorities. What I plan first and what I do first and choose to do if there's a conflict of only so much time. What do I choose to do first? When I promise Saturday to Barbara, I'm usually heading for trouble if I wake up on Saturday morning with this attitude. Oh boy, it's Saturday. I think I'll sleep in for a while. Sweetie, would you mind getting breakfast? And I'll be down in just a bit. Oh, by the way, I like the paper. So when you've made the coffee, would you mind running out to the curb and getting the paper? Maybe you could do that before you go off to Home Depot with my list. You remember I'm getting into this Home Depot stuff. The problem isn't that I am taking it easy, or even that I'm enjoying myself, both of which Barbara allows me to do with great generosity. But the problem is, I've promised the day first for another purpose. It's Barbara's day. It's the kids' day. And Sunday has been promised first to the Lord. It's the Lord's day. And so properly spent, my Saturday is not self-indulgent, nor is it mechanically dutiful. And properly spent, Sunday is not self-indulgent, nor is it mechanically dutiful. The Lord's day, because it belongs to Him, is not to be marked either by joyous legalism or by unbridled leisure. Both are inappropriate ways of loving and honoring and delighting in the Lord on His day. So what does the Lord want? What does He want from us, His people, on this day? Well, you have to come back next week. Because the specifics we're going to unpack, and we're going to do it in a little bit creative way next week. It's going to be fun and a little bit different. I want you to think this week, would you? What does the Lord want from me on this His day? Maybe go back and read those passages of Scripture from the bulletin. Ask yourself the question, what does God want from me? And what, therefore, is the doorway and the pathway to my delight on this day? And I'll give you a hint of where I'm going. Next week, we're going to say something about work, something about worship, and something about wonder. So you think about those three things this week. And most of all, think, what would it mean if I radically restructured my life so that the Lord Himself had absolute priority over this day? And I'll tell you the answer to that question. What would happen? One, the Lord would be honored on His day. And two, you will be delighted. Let's stand and sing just the first and last stanzas of the hymn that is in our program. Just the first and last stanzas. The Lord our great God bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face to shine upon you. The Lord give you the grace to order your lives so that He is the Lord of glory reigning in your hearts, and so that you take your deepest and surest delight in Him. God bless you.